This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
So welcome, welcome, welcome. You are here live with Dr. Jeff Werber here for the next, 30 minutes or maybe more on Pet Life Radio and Ask the Vets with Dr. Jeff. And I'm waving hello, 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 Sharon, hello. So anyway, you know the drill. How many of you are here every week? Anytime, any questions you have, now's the time to ask. I'd like to fill in some of my cases of the week and also talk about, well, today, of course, because next Saturday is July 4th and my show's not till Sunday. So we're going to talk about 4th of July today. And a number of things we want to talk about. Okay, so first of all, any questions you have, let's hear them. So I have a very interesting case, and interestingly, is a broader concept. It's okay that your veterinarian, myself included, don't have all the answers. But a lot of times we have to go with our hunch. And you have to look at, I always say a good diagnostician takes the blinders off and starts thinking out of the box sometimes. Things that just don't make sense. So great, great case. This was about Henry, about an 8-year-old or maybe even a 6-year-old golden retriever. Came in for, routine. I had an eyelid mass. So we took the eyelid, do anesthesia. And so, the dog did great. Eye looks great. But ever since the surgery, this dog has been regurgitating. Can't swallow anything. And of course, the thought was, all right, doc, what happened during surgery? Something must have happened. And I'm thinking to myself, this was fairly routine. Dog did great immediately after surgery. So something else was going on. So we ended up kind of start working it up, playing it up, taking some x-rays, doing an ultrasound. What the heck is going on? And we noticed that in his esophagus, not the trachea, remember the endotracheal tube goes down the trachea. X-rays, the lungs look clear. Everything looked good, except there was something abnormal about the esophagus. I'm thinking, this is not right. Something's going on. We don't do specialty work. We don't have the endoscope where we can go down the esophagus and look. So we were kind of just, trying to use some logic. I didn't think it was anything to do with the actual anesthesia. It could have. I never say never. You learned that a long time ago. But something wasn't right. Eloise, we're talking about Henry. So I finally set up to refer Henry to a colleague of mine who does endoscopy. And I know it's very expensive, but we had to find it. It wasn't like he was a 14-year-old golden and it could have been something else. We talked about cancer. To me, it seemed like there was something there that didn't belong there, i.e. something blocking it. And I am not going to say quits for something that was possibly diagnosed and possibly could be fixed. So finally, it worked out that we were able to get him to my colleague who helped them a little bit financially. Bottom line is it was, and again, I like being right sometimes, right, Vicky? So, I didn't think it was related to the actual incident, to the anesthesia, but I knew there was something there. And I tried to push it in. But again, you're doing with an esophagus, which is a very, very, very delicate tissue. And the worst thing you want to do is put a hole in an esophagus, because now you're looking at to fix that, you have to crack open the chest. Most of the esophagus is going through the chest until it hits the stomach, just through the diaphragm. So you don't want to mess with that. I certainly wouldn't. So anyway, bottom line, it was a clump of hair mixed with that. I know I did a cytology. It's when I went in there with my tube, at the very least, I said, let me collect some sample of something. Let me see what it could be. And it came back with esophageal tissue. And this one got me. Particles. What kind of particles are in a normal esophagus? That's not right. That's not normal. It wasn't tissue. It was particles, i.e. something foreign, an inanimate object within, and it was shedding pieces of, but I'm so glad that we did that cytology, because that really put me back on the track that I was suspecting. This is something in the esophagus. We got to try to get it out. So sure enough, my good friend, all right, Dr. Pedraza, amazing guy. He went in with a scope. And he also saw what I saw, something unusual. He was able to pull it out. And actually, he shows it. It was just this long, and it was literally occluding the entire esophagus. He's got the video. It's great. So anyway, that stuff I love. And I'm so glad, we're all glad, that he's doing better. So in fact, Vicky, if you want to give us an update, please do. All right. Question. Does a wild animal have to have lepto to spread? Yes. If they come in the yard but aren't sick. Oh, absolutely. Because it all depends. If they have the lepto bug in them, it's being shed in their urine and their feces. And then if your dog or a dog back there licks the urine or licks the feces, which they're inclined to do, or they drink out of a stream, you know, up in the mountains or the hills and the canyons that these wild animals are defecating and urinating in, that's how it spread. In fact, when they had that big scare in the Santa Monica parks because of the rats, that's exactly how it shed. So yes, and a lot of times these wild animals aren't really sick, so they can easily have it, shed it, and they themselves not be sick. So yes, you want to be really, really careful. And again, it causes mostly kidney related problems, but also could be liver. These dogs get really sick. And the only good news is if there is, as you can support them and get them on the right antibiotic, it is a bacterial infection. It's not a virus. It is bacterial. So as a bacterial infection, it can be treated with the appropriate antibiotics. Any meds that can help my 16-year-old border collie better control of pooping can't seem to make it out of the doggy during time. Ah, okay. So, well, first of all, there's a lot going on here. This could be age. I mean, 16 years old, I don't care what the breed, though we know that border collies, Australian shepherds, they do have longevity. So whether it is maybe more of a dementia, just a weakness where like they got to get out, they feel it coming, but they're old, they're a little feeble, and they're saying, ah, God, you know what? It's okay. There are jokes about that, you know, about men not being able to control it and having prostate issues. So I'm not going to go there, but I will tell you that that could be it. It could be also just weakened sphincter muscles. Now, with bladder sphincter, there are some medications that can be used, like Proin, phenylpropanolamine. So it's a possibility. Also, the anal sphincter could be an issue. So when they know it's coming, but they can't get out in time, but they're actually getting up to do it, then you're thinking of more of just poor control over time. And not a lot you can do. Now, if the dog is straining a lot to poop, can't get it out, and then it finally comes out, then I'd say, yeah, stool softeners might be good. Lactulose might be good. Added fiber to the diet might be good. But if it's just they know it's coming, when they finally get up to go outside, they don't quite make it, that's just more of a neurologic signal from the colon to the brain saying, okay, it's time. And they're not getting there fast enough. JB, how you doing? Eloise, thank you so much, Vicky. That's nice to say. And I always say these are the cases that I, as a veterinarian, really just take so much joy in, that we know that it was these hands or this decision that actually makes the difference. The one who's not willing to say, you know what, I'm going to quit. I just talked to another client about another case where the two other veterinarians before said they should put the pet to sleep. I'm saying, why? No. Let's try this. Let's try it. Sure enough, that dog is still, after a little surgery, it wasn't even that terrible. The animal is doing great. So, you know, you got to put it all together. That's one thing I'm never going to say I dislike about specialists, but specific specialists they do a lot of extra training, 3 or 4 years, more than just veterinary school. But once they have their specialty, that's all they're thinking. And they forget that, realize that, wait a second, there is more could be going on in this body. Let's not pull the plug just because it didn't fit my specialty. And that's what frustrates me. You know, people tell me, they'll come to me and they say, you know, Harry, hear about it. We hear you are a great diagnostician. I'm saying, no, I'm just a regular guy. It's just that when, as a general practitioner, that's it. We take those blinders off and we kind of think of the big picture and try to put it all together that makes sense. So all I'm doing is just basic thinking. It's not like anything fancy. It's not anything so great. But sometimes you can go to a GP and the GP might send you to a specialist. But if that specialist, it doesn't fit their specialty, don't give up. Don't give up because of one specialist. There's more going on. And that's why something like internal medicine specialists, because they kind of have a broader range. It's not just cardiology. It's not just neurology. It's not oncology. It's not derm. All these things are now under the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine. So you can be a veterinary internist and have sort of a general idea of some of the other subspecialties within internal medicine. And that's how I feel. Yeah, trust me, Vicky, I'm never always right. But I know that. That's another thing, is you have to know. I always say, and this is what gets me about some of these younger doctors. Of course, it's very important to know what you know. But in my book, it's more important to know what you don't know, i.e., you need to know what your limitations are, and that's when you refer. As I always say, when you don't know what you don't know, i.e., you think you may know something, that's dangerous. That's what gets you into trouble. You have to be very confident to know what you're good at, but also know what you're not good at. It doesn't mean you're good at it. It just means it's a knowledge, right, outside of your arena, outside of your specialty, outside of your realm. Then you know what to refer to. And that's the thing. So yes, it was a hairball. It was mixed with hair, but once it was, there was other things there. It was just hair. There was, who knows what it is. Obviously, this dog, a retriever, and we know retrievers, they'll sometimes eat anything that's not bolted down or doesn't eat them first. So he was probably eating some things. And then it just became that snowball effect. Whatever it was by itself would have passed no problem. But because it started clumping up and something made it stick, and then the more stuff came in and they just got more. And every time he would try to eat something, he would either spit up, or I'm sure some of the things, that's what got me, particles. No normal dog has particles in a body part. No way. So that had to be something foreign. So 13-year-old dog has back arthritis. We walked hunched, but the vet gave her Rimadyl and it helped out. I don't know if we... Okay, so here's the thing. If she's also getting vet med, and so we know we have some heart issues, which is fine. The only thing with Rimadyl, not just Rimadyl, by the way, I love Rimadyl. It's any non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, whether it's Rimadyl and all the, now the carprofen or the flexprofen, they're all the same. It's called carprofen. Then you have meloxicam, okay? You have now Zenrelia. So you have Deramax. There are many other non-steroidals that we recommend and we use on a regular basis. So it's important to know that they do have potential effects on the liver and even the kidneys. So all I recommend is if you're going to be long-term on any of these non-steroidals, it's very important to go in regularly and have your veterinarian test the bloods. Just make sure that everything's working fine. The drug in of itself is okay, but every dog is different how they handle things. So it's important to monitor those levels just in case you might have to switch from one to the other. For example, Zenrelia, great product, a little more expensive than the others, but the reason why it became so popular is because it's apparently is easier on the liver and the kidneys, etc. So if your dog is doing well on a non-steroidal, but you see those values are going up, it might be time to stop. Wait about 4 days or 5 days. You want to have a little lag time in between, okay? And then you could start like Zenrelia. So talk to your veterinarian. Ah, Henry is doing amazing, back to himself. I am thrilled. Ah, they pretty much shaved his hair down. That's a good idea. We don't want this to happen again. All right, I'm waving. And I love waving, you guys. The lepto vaccine is one which I'm really... So just, you know, Sharon, first of all, you're vaccinating against the bacterium. The vaccine itself is okay. I will tell you from experience, for me, it's a lifestyle vaccine. So if the animal's not at risk, I don't vaccinate my own dogs. I have five with lepto. But again, because my dogs have created their own pack, if you will, they are so obnoxious with their other dogs. I can't take them. Now, I can take individually. I can take my lab up to Runyon, right? But I'm not taking them as a bunch. No way. Between my Frenchie and one of my little terriers named Harry, those two are impossible when they see other dogs. I got to hold them really tight. They'll run across the street. They go insane. So because of that, and I'm just walking in the neighborhood, I don't do lepto. Now, of all the vaccines that we give on a regular basis, the lepto is the one that I usually see the most vaccine reaction, where they'll be a little sore. They might be under the weather for a day or so. But if your dog is subjected and potentially exposed, it's worth it for that 24-hour pain period. Or they can give it a little shot of Benadryl beforehand, or maybe a little non-steroidal anti-inflammatory for a day or two, just to help alleviate that symptom, that pain, that not even pain, it's discomfort. But it's still worth the vaccine if they're going to be exposed. All right, Katarina, hello. Well, oh, thank you so much. So this was Vicky's comment. I often use, because sometimes you have to think out of the box. I've dealt with cases like this before. And we talk about, you know, a saying I ask clients when I'm sort of going down that rabbit hole path of what do we do next? What are the likelihood? What are the possibilities here? And I say, if you're running along the beach in Malibu, California, and you hear hoofbeats chasing you from behind, what are you thinking? Horses or zebras? And of course, in Malibu, you're thinking horses. But you know what? Don't discount the zebra. I've had a couple of cases in the last few months where it was a zebra. So you always have to keep your mind open a little bit for that strange case, because you never know. Anyway, we're already 6 minutes past my 15-minute point, getting my dirty looks remark. So we are going to break here for a quick commercial here on Pet Life Radio. And don't go away, you on Instagram, because we'll continue while Mark plays the commercials. Mark, take it away.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Oh, sure. It's all fun and games until someone ends up in a cone. That's right. We're animals. Deal with it. Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we're back. We're just talking about how sometimes the veterinarian, especially a GP veterinarian, has more insight than even a human doctor specialist. And I get this all the time, because I don't think medical doctors even know the kind of training we have to go through. Certainly layperson doesn't know. I mean, I can't tell how many times they hear me being called doctor and they ask what I do. I say, I'm a veterinarian. They go, oh, so you're not a real doctor. You know, I say, go to hell, you're not a real doctor. You know that it's tougher to get into veterinary school than it is to medical school? We have to know not one species. That's my license plate frame. I've mentioned this. It says real doctors treat more than one species. Because we have to know a lot more, and it's so important. And because most of us, I mean, when I graduated med school, I'm out. This is my 43rd year of practice, right? There were no, and now we have lots of veterinary specialists everywhere. I mean, LA, surgeons, internists, you know, so some ophthalmologists, we only have a few. Neurologists, we have also a few. But I mean, some of the major ones, dermatology, internal medicine, even oncology, there are a number of them. We didn't have that 40 plus years ago. So the average older general practice veterinarian, as long as they kept current, which you have to do to some degree, or else you can't get your license renewed every 3 or 4 years. So that's why we need what we call CE. If you keep up on your CE and you do your reading, et cetera, we are from a broad spectrum, I think we are better off than a lot of the medical doctors. And it's scary, but it's true. I hope, am I streaming okay? I hope, Sharon, I hope you're back. All right. So last month's lab was great. It's before Rimadyl. All right. So what we said, if we've been on Rimadyl for a while, you know, at least a month or so, you don't have to get a whole panel. Just get just a chemistry, see how the liver's doing, maybe the kidneys are doing, and then you can make a decision for them. If they're okay, so the dog is tolerating the Rimadyl very well, then no need to switch. I hope it helps you dog parents. So thank you. Oh, Larry, how you doing? So Larry, I think your tickets are going to be coming. Larry, a good friend of mine, Dr. Larry, who actually, it was one of the few times. Larry is OBGYN, does surgery, and his brother's dog needed a surgery. And Larry asked if he can come in and scrub in with me, which I said, of course. So it was one of those great times that here I am, a measly veterinarian working with a real doctor specialist. Yeah, it was great. All right. Lepto to Zoe, she cannot walk, only got in the park. Should I do it? Wow. Yes, I think, yeah, it's worth it, because the problems with walking, you know, we can do the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. We can do things, we can medications, acupuncture, Atacrin. There are some things we can give to help the joints and the walking, but lepto in an older dog would be worse. So I think it's worth the shot. Again, we can pre-treat with Benadryl, maybe give a day or two of something, a non-steroidal after the shot. But I think it would be better to have that protection. Okay, Kat, you couldn't read my mind better. So here we are. One of the things I wanted to talk about in our remaining time, we are on the verge of 4th of July. And it's 6 days away. And we see, let me give you a statistic that I read, In fact, I'm going to be on KVC tomorrow morning on news talking about 4th of July. I just saw a stat that really surprised me. 75% of dogs have some degree of noise aversion, right? Noise phobias from 4th of July, the fireworks. 75%. And 20% of those, about a fifth of those, actually will successfully escape. So how they do it, who knows? Jump a fence, go under a fence, dig, break down a door, go, who knows? So it is really it's a problem. So what I recommend is the following. It's too late to train them. That's another story. We can do that another time. There is a way to actually condition your dogs to not be fearful of 4th of July, of the fireworks. And another thing I learned recently, which I think, you know, again, surprised me, is that it's a psychological, physiological event, that fear. It's not something that's learned. And so therefore, what I used to tell people is don't pay too much attention to that fear because you're reinforcing that behavior. And the behaviors are now saying, and the behaviors are like psychiatrists. They're saying that it's, you can't teach it or they can't unlearn it. It's not learned. It is a physiologic reaction. So what you want to do is if they want some affection, give them affection. But better yet, try to minimize the reaction in the first place, either through training, which that takes a little bit of time, or give them what we call our safe room. Give them a safe room. What is a safe room? First of all, windows closed, door closed, light low, music, right, or TV on. Something that can actually, you know what soothes dogs? This is very interesting. Classical music can soothe a lot of dogs. So play some classical music, play something that will get their attention away. Dog TV. Dog TV is great. It's television. Look it up. It's TV specifically, but they have, a human version and dog version. So for human versions, there's stuff like this. How can veterinarians, how can trainers help you with your pets? But the dog version is, first of all, it's created with a color scheme that dogs can pay. Remember, dogs are not colorblind per se, but they do see color differently. So it is now something in there. When you would look at it, it would look kind of bland, but for the dogs, it's not. And there's activity. There's a lot of motion. There are things that dogs like to see. So that with soft music or just let the TV play its own, dog TV play its own video and audio, that's okay too. The goal is, drugs. What about drugs? There are some natural things that you can give your dogs. Chamomile, passion flower, valerian root, things like that, melatonin, L-tryptophan. So there are some products out there. I have my Chill, for example. It's natural. If you have a dog that really gets worked up, that being worked up really badly is not good for their psyche either. So you need to really try to bring them down. And if you have one such dog, talk to your veterinarian. You have a week to do it, right? Talk trazodone or Xanax or just what else you can use? Gabapentin could help. Benadryl can help, not because of the antihistaminic effect, but because of the mild sedative effect. So there are a lot of medications out there, some prescriptions, some not, that you might be able to. CBD, animals that have been calmed with CBD, that's fine. So you whatever you want to do, is that the physiologic effect of continuing to be fearful is not good. We need to overcome that and either try to prevent it or using medication. So that's where I think it's important. Now, the second thing about 4th of July is something that I will want to bring in. Hold on a second. Can't remember. And so the anti-anxiety meds, as I said, you can use the trazodone, you can use Xanax. Things like fluoxetine are probably not good for this because it takes a month to start working. Now, if your dog is already on it, that's Prozac, then you can continue to do that. But you want something that's more of a fast acting, even acepromazine, something that, like if you're traveling with your pet and you wanted to calm them down for the air flight, that's what I'm talking about. Gabapentin, yes, a lot of animals do very well. Look, gabapentin is great for pain, right? But it also has a nice sedative effect. So gabapentin would work beautifully. So but the other thing with 4th of July that really gets us excited is the barbecuing. And I had a case I'm going to talk about right now that from Memorial Day, which was what, a month, 2 months away? A month and a half, I mean. So it's important to know this happens a lot. and you need to know about it. And that is, we always talk about the fatty foods, the meats, make sure they don't get a hold of the bones, et cetera, et cetera. There is a silent, I wouldn't say killer, but it can be, but it's a silent reason that creates us needing to go in surgically to fix your dog. And that is the corn cob. You have no idea how common this is. So what happens is you eat the corn off the cob, and you a lot of times what we do is you don't give the whole thing, and we cut it into thirds or halves, right? So now you have a piece that's about this long, it's about that round, and it's the corn cob. So what do you do? We don't eat it. Toss it in the garbage. Well, guess what? Dogs, and they have their snout pretty darn good. They will go into the garbage if you don't secure the garbage well, and they will get a hold of that piece. And guess what? Do they chew it? No, they swallow it whole. So here's what happens. That thing is just about the perfect size. It can get into the stomach. It travels down the esophagus. Remember, esophagus can stretch a lot into the stomach. From the stomach, all right, it goes through the pylorus into the intestine. Starts okay in the duodenum. Then it gets to a point as it's coursing through the small intestine. Boom, dead stop. Dead stop. Nothing can go. So what happens is as the body is trying, the intestine is trying to push it through peristaltic waves, it's just tightening and tightening. It's making it even worse. Cutting off blood supply can cause actual tear in the intestine. The dog is now vomiting like crazy because everything is being backed up. It is a major problem, and the only way to fix it is through surgery. And sometimes if you don't get to it soon enough, it's not just a simple, like a what we call an enterotomy, cutting into the small intestine and removing it and sewing it back up. It's been there so long, it caused necrosis, and now you have what's called an RNA, resection and anastomosis. We have to literally remove a piece of bowel, and then we have to take the two ends and sew them together. And that is not as clean cut and as 100% as just doing a simple enterotomy. Enterotomies heal beautifully. It's fine. I mean, you got to be really careful because when you're disrupting that blood supply, you have to sew it. You have to know where to cut. It takes experience. And it's one of those surgeries that even amongst the best surgeon, the best time, it can open up. And then you got to go back in again. But now you have a peritoneal. You have a peritonitis because the exudate that's coming out of the intestine, all right, it leaks out. All that intestinal fluid going through that has digestive enzymes. It's a lot of dirty material that you're eating and or the dog is eating, and it causes a rip-roaring infection in the abdomen. So anyway, you really, really, really need to be super careful, please, when it comes to corn. Make sure you throw it away in a very safe place. Make sure if it's a garbage can, you have some those straps. Don't let your dog get a hold of the corn cob. All right, yes, gabapentin. Yes, thank you. My calming pills, but I, in all fairness, Vicky, and I thank you, but no, I've had, like with anything, there are some dogs that just aren't going to respond to the natural stuff and may need something a bit more aggressive. And that's where I would go, yes, go to the trazodone, let's go to Xanax, things like that. But my calming pills usually work well. So, and anyway, it's called chill. Eni, how are you doing? Jill, all good. After the leptospirosis, well, if you can't walk, I mean, how long did that last? I mean, I've not seen even a dog that gets a bad reaction to lepto, it doesn't last days. And if it did, then there's something else going on. I mean, yes, it is an injection that does cause that post-injection discomfort, swelling under the weather. Yes, something that's going to last for days. I've not seen that. Yes, the lepto vaccine, I did. If you missed it, Sharon. So I'm saying it all depends on risk. If the risk is potentially high, you should do it. These animals, if you know these animals are have access to your surroundings, your yard, your block, you have to assume that they may be carrying lepto. So I would say in that case, probably okay to give the lepto shot. If you have a dog that reacts negatively, have you do a pre-injection with some maybe Benadryl, maybe post for a day or two, just a little non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. But overall, I think it's going to be safer to have the shot and not need it than having needed the shot and not have it. Because the lepto is not the disease that I remember back a few years ago when we had the scare of lepto in the Santa Monica parks. I saw a few cases of lepto. It's not easy. It's not a good disease you want to treat. So fortunately, the animals all did well, but you still want to be cautious. The anti-inflammatory really shouldn't reduce his appetite. In fact, if we have him on the steroid, that should increase the appetite. So we're going to go ahead and maybe you want to start an appetite stimulant like Entyce. That might help. Or that we, because it's not normal for just be pain, then it's time to start looking for something else. That means we do a more of a major workup. You know, it's always good to have a hunch. And a lot of times the hunches are right because just through experience. But when you act on your hunch and the problem is not being solved, then you have to, again, take the blinders off and open it up and say, okay, let's start from square one. As if we didn't know anything about this dog, you have a dog that's not eating for days, we need to work it up and see what else is going on. The chill chews, yes, I know. I mean, a lot of them do well. And I can't all. So, Bethany, hey, B, how's Gibson doing? My sister's new little Labradoodle, so cute. This one is like bicolored. It's white with the brown, light eyes. I mean, to die for, cute. Yes. So here's Vicky, great trainer, by the way. I recommend her a lot. So there is a way to train the noise fear by you do is, again, it's maybe you should, Vicky, have you come on. But the bottom line is where you start exposing your dogs to so soft the music, you don't hear it, but they do. And there's no reaction when it's super, super low. And you give, as it's being played, you're giving them rewards. You're rewarding the non-reaction. And then what you do is every training session, should be a few a week, you're playing the music a little bit louder, a little bit louder, a little louder. And what are they doing? When they hear the sound, it's not music, it's the fireworks sounds. Then they're going to come to you. Why? They want their treat. They know that sound gets their treat. And you keep doing it until the point you can play it really loudly, fireworks, it sounds like, and they're not afraid. They're running to you. They want their treat. So, but it takes a while. That is called, so when you have this kind of training, it's desensitization, all right? You're removing that sensitivity, and it's counter conditioning. You're conditioning them not to shiver, shake, and be afraid. You're conditioning them to come and get their treat. So you make it from a negative, fearful response to a positive response. But unfortunately, we don't have enough time between now and Saturday. So you're going to have to do the good old-fashioned private room, classical music, TV, you know, drown out the sound as best you can and keep them safe. And maybe starting next year, maybe April, it's a May to June, July, you have 3 months to actually start working on the training. Steve, how you doing? Okay, so if the dog doesn't do well with Entyce or doesn't want to eat the Entyce, you can also get, we have mirtazapine. Mirtazapine comes as a pill, or we use it especially in cats this way. It is a topical that you can rub inside the ear, just like a little strip, an inch strip, and you put on the inside of the ear. It absorbs. It's called transdermal, and then it gets into the system, and also it's a good appetite stimulant. Lulu's on at 8 weeks on July 3rd, 5 years ago. I just said with the Rose Bowl, the fireworks were like earthquakes. You didn't even react to it. So here is, and Sharon, this is interestingly, I've had many, many dogs. I have 5 right now. I usually have anywhere from 3 to 5 at a time. I have never, ever had a dog that reacts. I have no idea why. Maybe because they learn from each other. Maybe because they're a pack. They have each other for protect. I don't know that from a training or psychological perspective why they do not react. In fact, I keep them outside my yard, and they're off. They could care less. I walk out. I give them treats anyway. So they come. They see me coming out. They get through, zero shivering, zero fear. So I don't know whether I'm lucky or maybe it has something to do with the pack mentality, and they see that the other dogs aren't worried. So what am I worried about? I have each other. But that's a great point. So yes, you hear this? So some big furry boys, right? They love corn so much. It's true. Now, corn by itself is fine. You want to take the corn kernels off and feed it to them. That's great. But don't let them have access to the cobs. Okay, what do we got here? Your analysis results should come back within a day. Maybe if it's on a weekend, maybe 2 days. Yeah, I mean, it also could be what we call a sterile cystitis. So I wouldn't run back to medication without doing a urinalysis first, because one of the things we're learning, and this is where the bacteriologists get so mad at the GPs like I am, is trying to use antibiotics based on a good hunch, all right? Because so many times, listen to this, I've had classic UTI signs, even sometimes blood, and I start them on antibiotics, send the urine off because I want to get a head start, and I want to wait 1 or 2 days, and guess what? Comes back, no bacteria. So yeah, it's better to wait at least the 1 day, maximum two, get an answer before you make a decision. Okay, that didn't believe me when I said, I think so, she has urination. So you know that. So there's a case. Now, a lot of times you have to have started the antibiotics. So this is where you have a battle, and trust me, between practical medicine and academic medicine. And I usually tell people, I am not an academic, not at all. I'm a practical guy. So practicality says you have an animal, history of UTIs, true UTIs, exhibiting the same symptoms. Let's start the antibiotics. All right. The academics say, no, you need to wait until you have an answer. And usually it's a 1 day difference. So, and then if you see bacteria coming back in the urine, then yes, you start. So it's a tough goal with that history. And I would start. And, or another discussion is, if we start antibiotics, this is also important then, if we're going to start antibiotics and comes back the next day or 2 days later, sterile, there's no bacteria, you can't stop the antibiotics. Once you start a course, you got to run it through, because the best way to create resistant bugs, all right, is to start and stop and start and stop. No, you need to kill every last one, even if it was not a bad one. But that's another good question for the bacteriologist. Okay, so now if we have the allergy shot, it could be that this is related. I'm just trying to draw the link between a urinary tract infection or inflammation, cystitis, and allergy. Now, food allergies, for sure, chicken, turkey, and beef, if you suspect food allergy because they're chewing at their feet, rubbing their faces, then yes, 100% eliminated. You want to go on to what's called a novel protein diet. That's a diet that of a protein they probably never had before, had never been exposed to before. But during this trial, you need to only stick to that one protein and that one protein only, and that includes treats. So novel proteins could be bison, lamb, not so much lamb, bison, venison, rabbit, pork, alligator, cod, tilapia, salmon, things that most dogs have never been exposed to. And you want to, as I say, duck is also a good one, but no poultry and no beef. I said lamb is okay, but there were a lot of foods on the market years ago, like lamb and rice. Oh, by the way, speaking of rice, corn, wheat, and rice, I would also avoid. So you want to stick to either grains or vegetables that, again, most dogs have never been exposed to. Like quinoa, like barley, like oats, like cauliflower, broccoli, green peas, sweet potato, things like that. So they got to get their carbs another way, but you want to make sure they're not getting it from anything that typically you've been exposed to before. All right. Little one's delicious, I can sure. All right. So I'm joining. Thank you. Oh, a lot of new people here. Thank you so much. By the way, for those of you that are new, if you have any question, you don't have to wait till Sunday. You can reach out to me and I'll help you as best I can. I'm not recommending it for everybody. Absolutely not. I don't do my own dogs. It's a lifestyle. The ones that I recommend for everybody, well, rabies, I have to recommend. Keyword recommend. I can't force it because it's required by law. Distemper parvo, it's everywhere, as is Bordetella. Now, the new influenza. If so many people now go to daycare, they go to the park, say they go to groomers, you probably should do influenza as well. It's fit in that same category as the upper respiratory disease complex, CIRDC. So it would probably be something I'd recommend. But lepto for me is truly lifestyle. It's like Lyme. I'm not giving Lyme disease vaccines. Rattlesnake. I'm not giving everybody rattlesnake vaccines. Lepto is the same. It all depends on where you take your dogs, where you walk them, and what is the likelihood that in those areas, there could be animals that are shedding the lepto bacterium. Okay. Thank you. Many of you tuned in today. I appreciate it. Looking forward to hearing, seeing you again. Please tell your friends. It's a half hour. It usually extends more than a half hour. It's free. And I'd love to help you with your pet. So if there's anything out there you need help with, please just get a hold of me and I will do my best to share it with you. All right. And that's it. See you here next week. No. If the allergy shot real quick, if we got to turn the show off, it depends on the dog. If it's the Cytopoint says it's good for a month. If you're getting 8 weeks, that's great. But if you go 8 weeks and there's still no signs, don't give it because of a certain preconceived schedule. Give it when needed, but not sooner than 4 weeks. How's that? All right. See you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.